Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
One more day to go before we get to Game 6 in Boston. Sabres up 3-2 in the series, practicing today, heading out of town this afternoon, and a lot to get to from around the NHL last night. Your input always welcome here on Sabres Live. So hit us up at Sabres Live with Marty and Brian. Does it feel like an exceedingly long period of time between games 5 and 6?
Like there should be back-to-back games.
Like, why am I
exhausted
right now thinking about this by the hour? Like, it's crazy and it's exciting.
And why do you have so many notes?
I'm recycling.
I'm recycling. With zero notes.
Yeah,
for today's
show. You went clean slate, and I'm recycling some pages that I may or may not have lifted some nuggets off of. You know, like sometimes
A
lot of stuff in preparation of any game gets left on the cutting room floor.
Plenty of stuff gets left
on the cutting room sometimes floor. It's worthy of revisiting. Today, obviously, we're looking at the Sabres being on the ice right now. Not everyone, of course. Noah Osland was injured in the last game.
He's
going to miss time. Logan Stanley was not on the ice today. Kesselring was in his place among the pairs. And there's, you know, as we expected, presence of Josh Norris in the place of Noah Osland.
No tweaks to the lines, because Lindy Ruff hinted
yesterday. In essence, yes. Yeah.
He basically said, maybe there'll be some tweaks to the line when Josh Norris comes back, but it's basically Thompson with Tuck and Krebs, and the McLeod line is the same, and then Norris fills in where Osland was, but that was Norris's spot in the first two games,
and
so
no
changes.
Right, and you can't really say fills in. Because Josh is a regular, and for the better part of Osland's time this year with the Sabres, which was, you know, most of the year, 60 games, we saw a lot of Osland on the wing with Norris in the middle and Doan on the right. It does lead, and we'll update you as soon as we hear anything more from Coach Lindy Ruff, as it pertains to the blue line and Stanley's absence today. Stanley was real close to being a potential OT hero in Game 5. His offering, I believe, tipped by Greenway, was one of the good looks that they had in what was almost 10 minutes worth of overtime. But just to the point of Norris, like we discussed it a little bit yesterday, he's now gearing up for his third career playoff game.
Yes.
The first two... Interesting, certainly, from the Sabres' standpoint, the way they played in the first two home games here, ended up with a split. We thought Norris didn't look 100%. Clearly, that was the case, based on him missing a couple of games after that. But I think it might be a good time to do a little reset on Josh and the season that he's had. So, 34 points in 44 games.
Yes.
We mentioned playing an awful lot with Osland and with Doan. He's at 2.9 points per 60 minutes in all situations, which is actually the highest mark of his career. So the productivity is probably very close to expected upon the acquisition of Norris from Ottawa. The concern, obviously, was always going to be health. Mm. It is for any player, but Norris, unfortunately, has had some really bad luck. But when you look at points per 60 and his career shooting percentage, which is 18.2, which is a very, very, very high number.
It was 18.8 this year.
Yeah. What should we expect if we see the best version of Josh Norris, based on who's on either side of him, his role, his understanding of who he's playing with? Because keep in mind, Josh Doan, only his second year, but had a career year, right? Yeah. So a lot of goals coming. Noah Osland exceeded expectations. You need to make sure people get credit for other people's success. And so I'm really...
But all of that started, in my opinion, when Norris came back. And a lot of the winning started when Norris came back. He missed 24 games after getting hurt the first game of the season against the New York Rangers. What I saw to Norris this year, and I was like, I think he's more of a playmaker than a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked to him even on this show, and he's like, I consider myself a shooter. So he finishes the year 3 goals in the last 5 games. He's a shooter. 7 points in the last 6 games.
Mm-hmm.
He can also be a playmaker because he's got guys on his side. Yes, the first 2 playoff games were not good for Josh Norris because to our kind of observation, he got tumbled into the boards, did not look good coming out of that, and maybe tried to play through, you know, something that obviously had him sit a couple, well, three games, but two where he was really not available. One, he was available, but they decided to hold him off. So he didn't look good in the first two games, but I think there was something that was triggering that. But when Josh Norris is on his game, number one, it gives you the depth. And I think the Sabres going to Boston tomorrow, their depth has to be the factor, the main reason why they get offense, the main reason why they dominate the game. Mm-hmm. Because Thompson's line, McLeod's line, Norris' line, all three have to be able to just build this report, like one after another. Boston has the pass the line. And they did some tweaking in game five for Boston, saying, okay, let's move lines around and let's see what's going to happen. But I still think that it's a one line kind of, you know, leading the charge where Buffalo can have three lines and need to have Norris' line producing offensively.
Got to remember, I know there were changes last game, but the Zacha line was one of the best number two lines across the NHL
season.
This year.
Yeah. Yes.
So I think that threat still very much exists from Boston. But to further the point on Norris, and maybe to get you to answer the question, what do we expect from Josh, who can't run from what he was in his first big season in the NHL, which was a 35-goal scorer, and he shot 20%, which is, again, a very high number. But if your career is at 18, that's you're splitting hairs here from one season to the next. But Norris was only at about a shot and a half per game this year, as opposed to three shots in the big season like 5-6 years ago. There's always the other side of it, meaning the opponent. There was a newness to Norris in the NHL. You then, as an opponent, you learn how to defend. But we went through this during the late stages of the season when Ryan McLeod refused to shoot the puck. And I'm just curious, from what you've seen historically in all your time, being in rooms, being around shooters that you know, because you face their shots every day in practice, and you see how coaches, whether it be head coaches or assistants, try to get through to players gently or otherwise, massage them, encourage them, show them, remind them what they can do. Do you think Norris is in that place where he needs a little reminder of how good a goal scorer, and how does he then potentially shoot more often?
I would only show two clips to Josh Norris. I would show him his goal against Chicago and his goal against Dallas. Those are like 25 feet out, wrist shot, beat the goalie clean, no screen, not a one-timer with the goalie had to move into it. One-on-one. You had the puck, the goalie zeroed in on you. You beat both times the goaltender up, one over the shoulder, right shoulder, one over the left shoulder. And that's the shooter that you are. Shoot that puck in those situations much more. In game one of the series, Norris had one shot on goal. In game two of the series, Norris had one shot on goal. If that number is 3, 4, 5 in game six tomorrow, he's not only getting a goal, he's probably getting a goal and an assist on a rebound, on a play in the offensive zone. And again, I think that's what Norris can be. So that's what I would show him. And look, he missed three games. That's, you know, that's fine. Get yourself better. But I don't think game six is the time to say, let's let him get into the game. Maybe in the third period, maybe in game seven, he'll be good. No, he has to be good right from the get-go, because the Sabres going into Boston, that's a big game. That's a big start of the game. And to me, scoring first is huge. But scoring the team that scores the second goal, their second goal, that gets to two, the first team that gets to two is the team that wins. Sabres weren't able to get to two in game five. They did it in game four. Boston wasn't able to get to two in game three. The Sabres were able to get to two first. Like, that's the big thing. And Norris has to be a factor in getting to two before Boston gets there.
How much extra weight, though, is there on Norris and his line, considering that Zucker, McLeod, and Quinn have also not scored a goal? Now, again, this is I mean, you can start going through every team's roster, and I think you would be surprised when you look at some teams that are and have already had success, i.e. moved on to the next round, which we'll get into coming up. You have players that may appear to be quiet. That's just the nature of the playoffs, and it takes a while to have your sample size sometimes mirror what you typically do in a regular season. So back to that point, is there even more pressure on Norris and his line if you have, and or do you have concerns about the McLeod line and its production right now?
There is pressure on the Norris line, obviously, because, again, that depth, right? Like Thompson line, McLeod line, Norris line, you have to be able to produce. If you're not producing goals, at least producing chances, spending time in the offensive zone. And what we're seeing now with Boston, the way they play, is they clog up the neutral zone. You know, Sabres have to dump it in, have to chip it in the corner, have to chase. But if you have possession, you have to be able to spend time in the offensive zone, and it has to go from line to line to line. So there is going to be pressure on the Norris line to be able to just stay in the offensive zone and make it happen. Now, there's a ton of pressure on the McLeod line. And the reason why I know there's pressure on the McLeod line, Duffer, is because at practice today, Jack Quinn has white tape on his stick. Jack Quinn has never been a white tape on his stick player. You know, players do that when they're feeling like, I need to get something going. I need to change something. Look, Quinn doesn't have a goal yet in this series, right?
He's actually looking for his first professional playoff goal.
Yep. Yeah, he hasn't had a goal.
He had a 10-game run with the Amerks early on, obviously, and didn't score in that, despite his regular season being amazing. And this is not picking holes on anyone. It's just stating a fact here, and we've seen him.
But the white tape shows me that he's searching for something.
Of course, yeah.
He's searching for something. He had 5 shots in game 3, which was the most, but he's only had 7 shots in the other 4 games. Mm-hmm. That's less than 2 a game. Like, Jack Quinn has to shoot 3, 4, 5 times a game. He's got that with that weapon. He's got that tool. Got to use it. But right now he's searching for something, and that line is searching for something at 5-on-5.
He's been more of a playmaker against the Bruins in his career, and obviously we saw that in Game 1 with his stunning assist to Matias Samuelsson that put Buffalo in the third period lead and allowed them to ultimately take that game. Lion in goal today in his own net in practice, as you would expect. Again, we'll update you a little bit further from Lindy Ruff as to other changes here in the show. So, around the NHL from last night. Well, once again, one goal games, high drama, incredible, really. And as expected, when you allow yourself to revisit the regular season standings, I'm already exhausted by this narrative that Montreal isn't like equal. Like, why Tampa is in the eyes of so many like some massive favorite. They're not. They're both 106-point teams. Mm-hmm. Everything's been one goal. Montreal has 3 leads last night, and they hang on to the last one in regulation and win 3-2 for a 3-2 series lead. It's impressive. They're awesome. They have everything. They had an insertion of Gallagher into the lineup. He scored. They have depth. They are, and we'll do our Coach of the Year finalists, the Jack Adams finalists, later on today in advance of it being officially announced tomorrow. There's a lot to love about this Montreal team.
So you talk about coaching. This was the first time in this series that I feel Marty St. Louis went to his coaching like book, and because he changed the line. He put Josh Anderson on the top line with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield. And it's not that Josh Anderson's going to make a big difference. I think if that line's going to go, it's because Suzuki and Caulfield get going. But it frees up Slavkovsky, who's going to be with Demidov, with Newhook. It allowed Texier to get some looks, Kirby Doc to get some looks, Gallagher to come in. I really feel like this was the first time in all series that Marty St. Louis made some adjustments to try to counter what the Tampa Bay Lightning were doing. Lane Hudson, amazing. Again, that pass to Texier at the start of the third period to give the Montreal Canadiens a 3-2 lead was awesome. Jakub Dobesh in net. Look, were the 2 goals he gave up okay? Yeah, they're fine. They're 2-on-1s. They're stoppable plays. But at the end of the game, the Tampa Bay Lightning took the last 13 shots of the game. Mm-hmm. And 6-on-5 for 2 minutes. And they buzzed and buzzed and buzzed. And Dobesh was really good. Mm-hmm. Now,
who does he remind you of?
Who does he remind me of?
In the history of the game.
I don't know. I don't have any comparable.
Let me know when it hits you. Not today. Could be any day. Obviously, their season's not ending anytime soon.
I'm trying to look.
No, no. I think there's some silly little things in there. Not silly. There's some little things in there that might might make you think of somebody else.
I'll tell you this. I did not like Nikita Kucherov at the end of the game last night for the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, but probably, I mean, compared to the Vasilevsky third goal allowed, I mean.
Vasilevsky, you know, first goal, the Gallagher goal, and he missed his post. But
it happens, right?
You're 6-on-5. Your best player is Nikita Kucherov, number 86, on the right flank. And all he kept trying to do was to come up in the zone and do the high rotation. And Montreal just sat really back, and they let him just take that ice over there. We'll let you have it.
It was fascinating to watch, though. What a sequence to end the game, and somehow Tampa did not score. And here they are heading back to Montreal tomorrow for Game 6 with the Habs in the lead 3-2. Philadelphia had a 3-0 series lead. It became 3-2. They won it last night in 6 in front of their home fans. What an incredible game by Dan Vladar.
Yes.
And company. This is a Philly team that has been exceeding expectations, especially in the last 2 months, and they end up getting the win last night with the most saves ever in a Flyers clinching game. 42 stops from Dan Vladar.
Yeah, Vladar was fantastic. He had a couple of maintenance days in that series and weren't sure at 3-0 if they were going to give him a break. He played the last two, lost, and now he looked the best that he's looked all series long. The Flyers, I mean, they defended, and they relied on their goalie. They were just waiting for that one moment, that one opportunity. Shelov's was good, too. And maybe if the Pittsburgh Penguins had started Shelov's in Game 1, maybe they're still alive. Maybe we're going to Game 7. Not that Stuart Skinner was bad in Game 1 and 2, but he wasn't great in Game 3. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those, again, a longer range shot with a screen. Goalie doesn't see it. Shelov doesn't see it. Off the post and in. And the Flyers, they advance. And, you know, that's a surprise to me. I thought Pittsburgh was going to show more offense in this series because they showed more offense all season long. Mm-hmm. They just couldn't get going offensively. The Flyers, really good defensively. And Rick Tocchet, really good, trying to put a plan together to stop Pittsburgh.
Cam York, the OT winner. Of course, he had been dry for almost half a season from a goal-scoring standpoint. So what a welcome sight this is for any defenseman to break through in this moment.
Yeah, and look, it's a simple play, a wrist shot on net, and we talk about it often. Like, you get to OT, you know, a shot, a screen, a rebound, get some chaos around the net. And the Flyers were doing that three high, a little bit like the Sabres do, where they bring a forward high, a high rotation, and you see the shot is just perfectly placed. And look, sometimes you don't have to be the biggest guy in front of the net, in front of the goalie. You just have to be there. And I feel like that's what the Flyers were able to do, to just get in the way of Artur Shelov's.
All right, Vegas and Utah. We'll start with the OT winner because it really was one for the record books. Almost singularly in the record books. Yeah. There are two of them now that have been overtime shorties in a multiple overtime game. This was overtime number two when Howden scores shorthanded, and with that, Vegas in stunning fashion because they scored late in regulation to send it to overtime. And then with Riley Smith doing his modern day Jay McKee sitting in the penalty box for a shorthanded OT winner, not a series winner, mind you,
yes,
but it does feel remarkable from the Vegas perspective that they score in this situation and take a 3-2 series lead.
Hey, penalties are being called in overtime, Duffer. There was a power play by Vegas earlier in the first overtime. There was a 4-on-4 situation in the first overtime. There was a power play. And I know people are like, oh, referees don't want to decide the outcome of the game. The only outcome of the game that's being decided if you call penalties is if your penalty comes through or if your penalty kill comes through. Well, the penalty kill came through for the Vegas Golden Knights on that short-handed goal. Tough, tough, because that's now two games in this series that Utah has the lead with like 5 minutes left, and they let it slip. They let it slip in the last one. They let it slip in the last minute in this one and lose in overtime again. Like, that is a tough go in the last minute to see Vegas come in and tie it up.
Dorofeev hat trick last night, and he erased three Utah leads with his three goals. It was remarkable. Look, he's been their top goal scorer 2 years in a row, which is saying something on a very balanced and obviously pretty elite Vegas team, even though they went through the late season coaching change, which obviously is to their liking and a major positive right now with Tortorella behind the bench. But again, we're that close to saying, what's Tortorella going to do now with the series down 3-2 going back to Utah? So that's the fine line we live in these Stanley Cup playoffs. But Dorofeev's been a wonderful story. So great on the power play this year, but man, he was dynamited everywhere last night.
And great at finding open ice, like in front of the net, to see where the puck's going to go. And on that goal that tied it up at the end of the third period, Jack Eichel's one-timer from the corner, when Dorofeev scored, Jack was exhausted. He barely reacted to it.
How many power play goals does Jack have this entire season?
I'm going to say one, if any.
He had one late in the regular season and none in the playoffs. But it's amazing.
But his shot finds a way and rebounds.
That's the thing, and that's why you keep thinking, okay, from a Sabre standpoint, even if Tage has a down year power play-wise, utilize the shot, create chaos on rebounds, right? Yep. And obviously that's one recipe that you would hope for power play success. So quite a night. That leads us into D&D. In a minute, I promise.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
Okay, so not only did Philadelphia win in front of their home fans last night, somebody went home extra happy. Cam York threw the stick way up in the 100 level, and we have video evidence of an elder. Well, yeah, I got to be careful here. He's probably not much older than me.
A white-haired gentleman that is young.
Exactly. What a moment, though. Like, first of all, thank goodness he's okay, and so is everyone else.
Yes.
Because, like, I wouldn't be paying attention. I would not have been paying attention.
I'd be everybody around me.
Oh, yeah. I'd get, like, just
trying to see the replay on the Jumbotron and all of that. And this was not a Jack Hughes, like, over the glass.
No.
This was a boomerang that was thrown
into the... This
is
like a discus toss in the Olympics.
Yeah. It was like 25 rows in. Like, he was way up in the 100 level.
Okay.
But what a celly. What a celly. And the building was loud.
That was full of joy. This disturbing moment was not. This is from Major League Baseball, and this is once again an example of how dangerous it can be to be situated in a team's dugout. EMT member took it right below the belt on a foul ball line drive into the dugout, and incredibly, such uncaring people around him in the dugout.
They're all laughing.
All I can do is like wince in pain and feel terrible for the guy who got hit, but everybody else is laughing. So.
Yeah, no, you know what? That was in the in the Kansas City Royals dugout against the Athletics in Sacramento. But here's the thing. If you want to have fun with a clip, there's a clip. Because back in the days, there was not a fence in front of the dugouts, and it was right at field level. They all sat there. There's a clip. And it's this guy, he literally hit like 8 foul ball all into the dugout in the same spot where the whole dugout moved.
Yep.
And then that security guard was the last one left in that spot until the last foul ball. He himself moved out of the way too.
Okay, more baseball, this time dazzling. How about the Bisons going with Cheerios night at the ballpark in August?
I love it. I mean, the jerseys are awesome. The hats are fantastic. Obviously, we know what it is when you drive downtown and they're doing the Cheerios at General Mills and it smells like that sweet honey oats and whatnot. So they're wearing the jerseys, the hats, and they're going to have an ode to Cheerios night at the ballpark. It's going to be awesome.
My city smells like Cheerios night, August the 7th. All right, finalists for the Jack Adams Award will be unveiled tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Who are your three?
Obviously, I think Lindy Ruff is going to win. So I'm putting Lindy Ruff as number one. I am putting Dan Muse as my second choice. This was voted before the playoffs. So the regular season that the Pittsburgh Penguins had, the surprising factor of their offense and everything, I've got Dan Muse. And I'm split on the third. I think it's a tied for third between John Cooper, Marty St. Louis, and Jared Bednar. I think those three are sitting in third place for me. Did I miss anybody?
No, I had Ruff and Muse. I would go Bednar, St. Louis, Warsofsky, and Sturm as my tied for third.
I put 24-point
improvement. Nobody had the Bruins improving like this.
Yeah, and a surprised improvement in the way that they did it. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the roster, Jeremy Swayman, big impact on that. That's why.
Right, just like Celebrini had a big impact with Warsofsky, but they had a 34-point improvement. You can't just look past that.
I guess Cooper for me is because you look at the injuries that the
Hedman absence, yes, but I mean other than that, their team was pretty healthy. I mean, you had another incredible season from Kucherov.
Yes.
You had an all-star season from Radish. You have Vasilevsky. Vasilevsky is a Vezina finalist again. And I'm not taking anything away from Coop. Like, I mean,
he's never won Coach of the Year.
I know, but it seems like a lot of people that have teams, you know, that are at the top of the standings don't get the attention. And I feel like Bednar is a victim of that as well. By the way, Caulfield, Kopitar, and Jake Sanderson have been named as the Lady Bing finalists
for this year. I'm surprised
that
Sam Reinhardt is not on that list.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's Kopitar's win, and then everybody else.
It's Kopitar's win.
Second.
I'm actually, Caulfield was on my longer list yesterday when we, picked our guys at the end of the show. Quick update from the Sabres. Logan Stanley is under the weather today. That's why he was not out there on the ice. We have lots to get to still here on Sabres Live. Tomorrow it's a game day. We'll actually be in Boston getting you set for that one here on Sabres Live. But Darren Dreger is still to come on the show. 50-50. We are into the final day of April right now. So this is your opportunity to head to sabres.com/5050 or scan the QR code on the screen right now on MSG. It is the Pet Adoption Assist 50-50 raffle that has been ongoing throughout this entire month. It's presented by Northtown Automotive, and with a $10,000 guaranteed jackpot, you can win big while helping animals in need. Proceeds benefit the City of Buffalo Animal Shelter. Again, sabres.com/5050. Darren Dreger from TSN coming up.
Of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We want to give you a shot at winning great prizes, so we encourage you to play the game of the night presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Scan the QR code on your screen here on MSG right now, or visit sabres.com/Seneca to play. Darren Dreger, hockey insider from TSN, is with us. The playoffs are ongoing. By the way, Marty and I were talking in the first segment, obviously, about Philadelphia advancing. What a series I'm expecting between Philadelphia and Carolina. They had one of the best four-game regular season series that I can recall this year. All one-goal games. All of them went beyond regulation time, so looking forward to Philly and Carolina. Dregs, what is at the top of your mind right now based on these playoffs?
Potential of game sevens. And I'm going to be careful as Sabres fans. I'm not wishing that on Buffalo. But, you know, we here in Canada, of course, are paying close attention to the Canadian teams. You know, the Montreal Canadiens with a huge win in game five. You know, so now game six is back at the Bell Center in Montreal. That building is going to be absolutely booming on Friday. But I do like the idea of the potential of a game seven there and just the intensity around that series. You know, then you shift over to the West and Edmonton clawing back against the Anaheim Ducks. What's going to become of that series tonight? We'll find out later. But again, I'm good. If there's a game seven on Saturday and there's another game seven on Sunday, however, I just, you know, who doesn't like game sevens, especially in the opening round of the playoffs, because hearts are crushed and fans are celebrating. I mean, it's just a myriad of different emotions.
Yeah, buildings are buzzing. Buffalo has been fun at KeyBank Center. You talk about Montreal. But what do you make of Pasternak saying after game five to the fans in Boston, basically saying, we hope you guys are going to be loud and be patient with us, like, you know, because in game four, it was pretty embarrassing, and they heard the boo birds, you know, from the first period on. So what do you make of a player kind of telling the fans, like, we hope you're going to be loud, but be patient with us?
Yeah, be patient is a strange choice of words. You know, how much more patient can you be? I mean, you're on the cusp of elimination here. And that is a rabid fan base, right? I mean, you know, Sabres would argue that they've got the best fans in the league. Everyone who's still participating in the Stanley Cup playoffs feels that way. And that speaks to the importance of a crowd and what the fans can bring, the energy that can be supplied inside a home venue. But I would say that the Bruins and their faithful have been through a lot at varying points of this season. I mean, there were times over the course of the year where, I mean, the Bruins were right there on the line, whether or not they were going to be a playoff participant or not. And then you've got the inconsistency of how they played against Buffalo in this series. So I can understand how there's a little bit of upheaval among the fan base. But if they're going to listen to anyone on that team, it is going to be a superstar in David Pastrnak, right? I mean, he's obviously beloved by Bruins Nation. So, you know, I guess he's just trying to take some of the heat off and hope that his guys rally and focus on the task at hand.
Well, they have a great leader in Pastrnak. He has been exceptional at times in this series, and that's why we're seeing what it is. It's a 3-2 Sabres series lead. The two games that are going tonight, Dallas at Minnesota. It's 3-2 Wild as they try to win Minnesota a playoff series for the first time since 2015. They'll do so, attempt to do so, without Brodin tonight. And Edmonton at Anaheim, as you mentioned, it's 3-2 Ducks. So both home teams tonight have the opportunity to advance. Now, you mentioned star power just a moment ago, and Kucherov is feeling a little bit of heat or hearing it, or maybe he's not hearing it. Who knows with Kucherov? Rantanen, I think, is in the same boat with Dallas right now. And sometimes the numbers are misleading. Like, you can look on the surface and go, oh, guy's got his points, but he's not having the impact. So what do you make of some of this star power and Dallas being where they are, which is up against the wall here after three straight trips to the conference final?
Yeah, I mean, based on the fact that the Dallas Stars are depleted, they can't afford to have any of their top guys not producing. And, I mean, Mikko Rantanen is one of the all-round players in the National Hockey League, right? Like, he can be so sound defensively. Normally, that's such a big part of his game, but he can beat you offensively as well. Dallas needs the best of Mikko Rantanen. They need the best of him and others. But I think of Mikko Rantanen differently than I think of Jason Robertson or I think of Wyatt Johnson, right? Just because, again, the depth of the game and how good he is in that two-way environment. I saw a funny Instagram post earlier today, and I assume that it came from a fan of the Minnesota Wild, but it was showing, impersonating Jamie Benn working out prior to the start of this series. I don't know if you guys saw it or not. No. And really, it was just a push-up bar or something along those lines. And all he was doing was leaning over and cross-checking an exercise ball. And that was the extent of Jamie Benn's exercise routine, which to me was awesome and hilarious at the same time. But look, I mean, there have been frustrating moments for the Dallas Stars through this series, and discipline has been a factor. 5-on-5, their scoring hasn't been good at all. It's been almost non-existent. And that just can't continue. But you do have to give credit, right? And particularly up the middle of the ice, maybe we undervalued, you know, how important, you know, those roles would be in the shutdown capacity for the Minnesota Wild. So that series to me is going to be an interesting one. You know, it's such a tremendous Central Division clash. I don't think that you could call the Minnesota Wild an underdog going into this series.
No, but, not at all.
I did think, you know, we have to do the ridiculous prognostications as part of our season preview. And I, in fact, picked the Dallas Stars to win the Stanley Cup. I just felt like there's, as good as Colorado is, I don't know, just second half, it felt like there was something missing there. And you have to mention Minnesota because of the year. I just thought that if the planets aligned for Dallas, that this could be their year. But here they are up against the ropes.
You're connected with the Department of Player Safety and the Situation Room, and I'm sure you're texting with people. What did you make of the Jamie Benn cross-check on Ryan Hartman? I thought it was going to be a one-game suspension. It's like right in the neck, but I don't know if, you know, they basically fined them, but what did you make of that?
I initially kind of thought the same thing. But then I'm reminded of some of the other examples that we've seen, and we're not even all the way through the first round of the playoffs. And I'm not going to label it as inconsistent or any of that. Difficult jobs to do. Paros, at the end of the day, is the guy that decides whether it gets to a hearing or not, and he's well informed by all of his lieutenants. But let's think about this for a moment, you know, because there have been other examples. You know, you had the Taylor Hall hit on Jake Sanderson, right? And I mean, obviously, everybody in Ottawa felt like that was a suspendable play, and it wasn't. For sure. You know, and you know, frankly, on and on it goes. I got to tell you, you know, even though I never played at that level, you know, I wasn't surprised at the outpouring of disgust over the Ridley Gregg sucker punch. I'll tell you, I'll share this with you. As we're going through our coverage that night, I reach out to my sources who are well connected with the process. And the sense was, after that game, that at worst it would be a fine. And then you wake up the next day and wait a minute.
Public now, got that one to go to a hearing, you mean? Like it just.
No, I think what happened was, again, you got to be, you know, like George Parros isn't pouring over the entire department, you know, minutes after an incident occurs. So maybe he didn't share his opinion on it with some of the others who are involved in the process. But, you know, I'm reading social media and I see Mike Rupp with a strong opinion on why, that can't happen. I mean, go down the list of all the ex-players who played a tough role in the National Hockey League. And there is that level of respect that you have to embrace and this cross that line. And I feel like even though George Parros has been an executive for long enough at the NHL head office, that some of this would have worn off. I think he's looking at it and going,
it can't happen.
That does not pass the test for me. And then you've got Ryan Getzlaff, who has influence on that. So I guess what I'm saying in coming back to the most recent incident of Jamie Benn, I mean, we'd have heard by now.
Yeah.
And they never want to take a player out of a series unless it's irrefutable. And I guess in this case, it's not that.
Well, maybe they decided they were going to have a hearing with Ridley Gregg because his next game is going to be a regular season game. And they're like, well, he's not going to get suspended in the playoffs, so now we can suspend him. Who knows? But anyway.
On to the next topic.
Yes.
This is a good one, I promise.
Yep.
More likely to be on a new team next season.
Ooh.
Brady Tkachuk or J.J. Paterka?
I guess I would say Paterka. But mostly because of the information that we have soundly from Brady Tkachuk and the Ottawa Senators. Like, I don't think that Steve Staios, as general manager, could have been more emphatic in describing the importance of Brady Tkachuk to the organization. You know, a year ago when this stuff surfaced, you know, again, I was reminded by the brass in Ottawa that Brady is the center point of the nucleus of the team. They've built the team around Brady Tkachuk. And because he's under contract, there'd be no reason. But here's what I've learned in my time, which is long as a hockey insider. When that speculation wheel starts to turn and we talk about it as mainstream media, guess what happens? Every team in the league pays attention to that. And yet, of course, general managers are calling or will call Staios to say, hey, I know it's just speculation. I know you addressed it. I know Tkachuk addressed it. And by the way, he left his family and a newborn baby to come back to Ottawa so that he could, you know, do everything that he had to do as part of the responsibility of being a captain in the NHL and face the media. And he vehemently denied and reminded us that, you know, he's at least a year out contractually from having conversations like that. So it would be a full about-face turn, I think, by the Ottawa Senators and Brady Tkachuk. But it's still fresh. It's still early. It just feels more like a long shot for me.
Oh, I don't know if it's a long shot, but I mean, you talk about, like, sometimes it doesn't pass the smell test. I feel like that one doesn't pass the smell test.
Where's Paterka going?
Yeah, this is another one. Like, he's been in the doghouse. Doesn't seem like it's working there. This season he had goals.
Yeah, he had goals. But his point production was down. But interestingly, he is just this season Utah's highest paid forward. That will change starting next season. But what's really interesting, no clauses preventing any moves here. Mm-hmm. So the door is open if.
Yep.
They feel like they need to move off of this player. So it's interesting.
And Duffer, real quick, and maybe it's a combination of two things. Like, I think Utah is going to be must watch in the offseason for what they want to do. And look, you know, you don't acquire big players, big pieces without giving something back in return. Why can't he be part of something that's bigger coming back to the Mammoth? So definitely a name worth watching.
I just think that, you know, because we've had time to digest all these teams that didn't make the playoffs and the cap going up and the lack of free agents, I think more players like Paterka are going to be quote-unquote in play because if there's an ounce of, we're not sure about keeping this player, then I think there's going to be an appetite from so many others to move in. That's all.
Hey, so, Drags. Yeah. Are we working together on Saturday if there's a game seven between the Oilers and the Anaheim Ducks? So do you think that is going to happen Saturday, game seven? Or do you think tonight the Anaheim Ducks will close it out?
No, I think there will be a game seven.
Okay, I just want to make my plans ahead. So.
Yeah, well, what do I know? But I mean, of course, it's possible based on what we've seen in this series thus far from the Ducks and everything they can throw at you. It was, for me, the way that the Oilers won the last game. Yeah. And, you know, Leon Draisaitl isn't going quietly into the offseason. Now, Connor's got something bugging him. We can see that. The numbers tell us. But he's still putting up 2 points a game. Like he's still contributing. If they get full buy-in and maybe a little bit of that secondary scoring tonight that we saw to start this series, then I like the chances of a game seven. I do.
Yeah, we'll see if either netminder or team can keep it under 4 goals against. That would be the goal tonight for both the Ducks and the Oilers. Drags, thank you so much. Darren Dreger,
hockey
insider from TSN, will enjoy the action tonight. And we'll wrap up Sabres Live right after this.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Let me remind you that you need new merch, and you can order it from the comfort of your own home. Buffalo Pro Shop is the brand new online store of the Sabres and the Bandits. You can visit buffaloproshop.com now to acquire exciting team gear in unique styles. All right, on this date in Sabres history, Ryan Miller posted a shutout, which was lovely to see, against the Philadelphia Flyers in 2006 before they would advance in the series. This was a 3-0 shutout for a 3-2 series lead.
Yeah, that was a big game because we won both games here. We go to Philly, lose both games, and then you're like, oh, shoot, right? Like,
and
we
how
come
did
back
the series
home.
End? With a 7-1 win in
absolutely
Philly.
Butt kicking in Philly. And our plane was broken on the way back. That
JP
was the whole
scored.
Situation. Yeah, JP scored. That was, man, like I talk about the building buzzing. I was actually talking to my brother last night. I remember coming in for games in 2006 in the playoffs. He goes, that building was rocking. I'm like, it's like that now. But that was a big 3-0 win in game five to get us to go to Philly, win game six, and then go on to Ottawa and so on and so on.
Happy birthday to Tim Kennedy, who's 40.
Oh, TK.
Yes, I thought you would perk up on that. Sean Malone, West Seneca's own, 31. Steve Smith, 63. Jason Holland, 50. And allow me, in the final 55 seconds.
Marty Rantanen, come in from Duffer.
I really shouldn't care about stuff like this. The further we move on from yesterday's Vezina finalists, the more agitated I get. I have heard the nonsense, in quotations, I'm not really picking at it that hard, but about Ilya Sorokin this year. Stop telling me about his high danger saves and all the shots he faced. Do you know where the game is played? The entire confines of the rink. Do you know what Sorokin's numbers tell me? That unless he was great, he was very average this year. He was barely over 500 in quality starts percentage. And those poor games are why the Islanders didn't make the playoffs. So there.
You have a point. You have a point. On that note, we're going to Boston.
Long live Logan Thompson, Scott Wedgwood, Dan Vladar. We'll see you tomorrow.